The left loves to kill American babies.
That's how they want to weaken our country.
55 KRZ, the talk station. The 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Friday. There it is. Got to be Friday. Woohoo for Friday. Brian Thomas right here. Glad to have Joe Strecker in the production studio and having him as executive producer. Got a good show lined up, as is typically the case. Tech Friday with Dave Hatter coming up, 6:30. Always enjoy talking to Dave, and he's got some, as always, sound advice for us. How to protect our digital identity. That's our first topic of conversation. Can you protect your digital identity? Behind the one-way mirror, a deep dive into the technology of corporate surveillance. And third topic with Dave, remote workers apparently bypassing what they believe to be inconvenient security measures, which you know spells trouble. Kind of always trouble with Dave Hatter. Anyway, so Dave at 6:30, followed by the Disabled American Veterans are going to come to the program at 7:30 to talk about the centennial celebration with the Cincinnati Pops at Music Hall. That'll be taking place on September 28th. It being Friday in the fall, as is the case in the spring, Ron Wilson at 8:05. Always enjoy my time with Ron because, of course, it being Friday, I like to start winding down my brain and getting away from the perils of the world, taking a little exhale for about a day and a half. That's about all I get. I wake up on Sunday morning and I get that feeling in my chest like, I'm going to have to start paying attention to politics again today. Anyway, Ron Wilson at 8:05, followed by, hey, local politics, Jason Williams at 8:40. He'll be talking about a couple of topics. He had his op-ed piece the other day in the Inquirer, defend the police versus defund the police. It's what Cincinnati's mayor's race is about. Obviously, defending the police, that'll be David Mann. If you're interested in Law and Order, you would prefer David Mann. If you're interested in a smoothly running city, your choices are David Mann and Aftab Perval. It will be David Mann. All I can do is keep repeating it. Whether anybody listens to me or not remains to be seen, but I am just so worried about the city of Cincinnati coming into this fall election. It's such an important election. It being off year, like 10% of the population is going to show up to vote, which is so depressing. Anyway, on that topic, also Jason Williams was talking about the Republicans' support of Issue 3, which is that Tom Brinkman inspired or created a ballot initiative that would change the charter amendment, reduce city council pay, allow for the recall of mayors, get rid of the pocket veto, among other things. The design is sort of a reform measure, given that, well, Cincinnati City Council revealed itself to be a little bit corrupt, if you haven't been paying attention. And I'm really not quite sure where to go. I'll just start with Chuck Schumer's comments yesterday. And your comments are always welcome, parenthetically. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or hit #550 on AT&T phones. Chuck Schumer announced yesterday that the Democrats had come up with a reconciliation and infrastructure agreement. He called it a framework on how to pay for this $3.5 trillion so-called reconciliation spending bill. And there's more figures out, and there's a great article. I doubt I'll be able to get into it today. $3.5 trillion is a phony number. It's by the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. They walk through each point, and they show exactly why the budget tricks and gimmicks that are in there. You know, the Democrats come out and give you this blanket statement like, you know, Medicare for all or whatever. And as it turns out, no, that's not really the case. Some things gradually creep up over time, don't kick in right away. Other things terminate by the terms of within the bill themselves, leaving the mess to be picked up by the whatever administration is in power at the time. They automatically shut down, and therefore, they presume that the Republicans will win the next election. going into 2022, as bad as the Democrats are handling things right now, most reasonable people expect the Republican Party to take over. And so when these terms expire, it'll be under Republican watch, and then Democrats will blame Republicans for, you know, killing children or babies or something. It's all budget gimmicks. So $3.5 trillion is a nonsensical number. It's way north of five if honest people are doing this. But back to Schumer, he says, okay, we got a framework on how to pay for the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill. He didn't provide any details on this alleged framework. After the press conference ended, a lot of Democrats stepped up to say, what agreement? What framework? What the hell are you talking about? In his comments, Schumer said the White House, the House, and the Senate have reached an agreement on a framework that will pay for any final negotiated settlement. Now pause for a moment and consider that statement just by itself. We've agreed to a framework that will pay for any final negotiated agreement. If you haven't negotiated agreement and come up with final terms as to what's in it, how in the hell do you know how much it's going to cost and that you can pay for it? Anyway, that's an aside. When asked about the details of this so-called framework and whether there's any progress on the rest of the Democrats' agenda, Nancy Pelosi said, quote, here's another quote, "The House and Senate and White House came to an agreement on how we can go forward in a way to pay for this." Kind of parsed out words, aren't they? A little wiggle room built into that one. We have consensus in overwhelmingly maybe 10 to 1, 20 to 1 in our caucuses as to these priorities, a higher percentage in the Senate. You know, Brian Thomas standing in the press corps raising his hand. What priorities are you talking about? Can you put a little flesh on the bones of what the hell that means, please? Because I'm standing here with nothing in front of me. You haven't released any details of the framework. We haven't seen any formal language of legislation. We just keep hearing $3.5 trillion and how it's going to save the world. Details, maybe, huh? A little bit? Nothing. She went on to describe the framework as, quote, "an array of agreements that we have," clarifying that, quote, "we're finalizing the outlay side," close quote. Word. More words, word. Oh, thank you for all the details, Nancy. Appreciate that. And Chuck. Pelosi then, moving away from Chuckie Schumer's point about framework on how to pay for the reconciliation spending with what's in the package, we don't know. Pelosi, when I said the framework was, again, I'll quote, "not about price tag, this is about what's in the bill," close quote. Anyone? I feel like I'm listening to someone speaking in a foreign language that I just don't understand. Because, you know, she could talk for 45 minutes and you come away and you're like, what was that? I heard nothing. Progressives are all about that. I mean, I've railed against progressives all the time. You know, it's about the community and we need action and we need to inject equity or and they're just words. They don't, there's nothing associated with them. It sounds like, oh, you care, and oh, boy, aren't you wearing your heart on your sleeve, and gee, I can see you're committed to fill-in-the-blank cause, but what you're saying doesn't mean anything. You're not offering a solution. You can you just, like, need money. We need money for resources to infuse into what and how. Bernie Sanders wasn't even invited to this party. They say after Chuckie Schumer's comments, I guess in Nancy Pelosi's comments, Bernie Sanders said it took only minutes to note that he was not included in the conversation about a deal to pay for Democrats' reconciliation bill, saying, and I will quote again, "I have no idea." Claiming that he hopes to know what's in this framework shortly, if one exists. Senator Mark Warner, Democrat, Virginia, said, well, and apparently he has been involved and central in these negotiations, said he didn't even have the, in his words, foggiest idea about the framework when Schumer announced it. Kristen Sinema, Arizona. Not read in on any agreement, according to Politico's reporting on that one. Pelosi, I guess it was Newsmax. Anyway, Tyler Olson, Fox Business, describing Pelosi leaving herself wiggle room when asked of the government on how to pay for the reconciliation bill meant the Democrats might have the votes to pass the infrastructure bill Monday. Quote, we take it one day at a time. I'm confident that we will pass it. But made clear there was she was not saying that the reconciliation bill will be complete by Monday. Okay. Everybody clear? Words. Now I can give you some substantive words on executive transportation because they're looking for folks that are career-minded and are interested in being chauffeurs. That's right, the black car service from executive.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Go to hell. There you go. 520, the Cloud Care CD Talk Station, and a very happy Friday to you. Tech Friday with Dave Hutter coming up in about an hour. All right, let's dive right into it. Kimberly Strassel, Biden's reconciliation mess. Got to give her props and credit for the op-ed since I was talking about that Schumer framework without any details. Kim writing, hey, Papa Joe Biden belatedly dragged from his recliner this week to settle escalating hostilities between warring Democrat siblings over a multi-trillion dollar agenda. No surprise that his 2 days of meetings accomplished nothing. Mr. Biden campaign is the ultimate grown-up and leader, and his administration kept up that facade for months. But the Afghanistan debacle was a reminder that Obama Defense Secretary Robert Gates described Mr. Biden as having botched nearly every foreign policy issue for 40 years. Today's party fight over the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill, likewise a reminder that a man who spent a Senate career drifting with the Democratic ties is ill-equipped to step up with a vision that will unite battling factions. Not that the squabblers couldn't benefit from some time out. Speaker Nancy Pelosi in late August dragooned her centrists into voting to begin a reconciliation bill in return for her promise that they'd get a vote on their bipartisan $1 trillion infrastructure bill no later than September 27th. Fast approaching. Democratic leaders figured a month was long enough to bully members into submission on the reconciliation bill's substance and the $3.5 trillion price tag and to tie the two votes together. But fights broke out over Medicare, drug pricing, climate provisions, and means testing. House committee chairmen rolled over objections and rushed out bills only to confront a stalled Senate. Senators Joe Manchin and Christine Sinema have refused to be rolled or rushed on the package, and the Monday deadline looms. Senators say, give us the infrastructure vote or reconciliation is toast. Progressives say, give us all $3.5 trillion of our reconciliation dollars or infrastructure is history. Meanwhile, the accusations and name-calling have burst into the open, exposing deep divides. New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is tweeting and retweeting accusations that her party's centrists are owned by pharma and the oil industry. Faiz Shakir, an advisor to Senate Budget Committee Chairman Bernie Sanders, blasted House Democrats who pushed back on drug price controls for daring to step out of line at this juncture and called for primary challenges. Oregon Progressive Representative Pete DeFazio griped that the infrastructure bill was crap, written by 12 rump senators, to include Mr. Manchin and Ms. Sinema, who are all pro-fossil fuel and, in his words, such jerks to boot. It was left to John Podesta, who served as President Clinton's White House Chief of Staff, to this week sent an unsolicited memo to every Democratic office warning that the party is at risk of implosion. He advised centrists to embrace the reconciliation process. More notable, he bluntly counseled progressives to climb down from their $3.5 trillion demand, pointing to the obvious, that they don't have the majorities or the mandate to pass such an agenda. Question is why the man who matters, the president, wasn't making that point from the start. Mr. Biden ran as a centrist, an alternative to the wild Sanders agenda. His campaign, to the extent he had one, centered on controlling COVID and restoring political norms. Even that agenda was a tough sell. He won a narrow victory. House Democrats lost seats. Remember, Chuck Schumer ended up with a majority leader in a 50-50 Senate. All this counseled a modest approach, assuming Mr. Biden had an approach. His career has consisted of latching onto whatever's the latest Democratic fad with no real defining ideology of his own. Upon winning his primary battle, he promptly invited the vanquished Mr. Sanders to write his policies. He allowed his ego to be stroked by aides and historians who assured him his presidency could be historic. The result has been a mammoth Bernie agenda strapped to a limited White House mandate and a president who is along for the ride. The Biden White House may yet clean up its mess, but the bigger point is that a Biden in charge wouldn't be here in the first place. Rather than invite Mr. Manchin to the Oval Office last week to cajole him unsuccessfully to support the $3.5 trillion, he'd have sat down with West Virginian months ago to understand his bottom lines. Ditto Ms. Sinema and House centrists. Rather than letting progressives bid up expectations for an unprecedented, wildly uncertain reconciliation strategy, the president would have explained political reality to his party. He'd have instituted, he insisted rather, it give him a win by unifying around an enhanced infrastructure bill, one that strategically picked off GOP support. A Biden in charge would at this moment be crowing that he passed the COVID relief bill and finally ushered in national infrastructure reboot over the congressional finish line. An argument can be made that the best thing that might happen to Mr. Biden now would be the collapse of reconciliation. The press would label it a feat, progressives would howl, but if a breakdown took the monstrosity off the table, it would provide the president an opportunity to reset, to refocus on a bipartisan bill, and to recast himself as reasonable and in charge. He might even save his party from a thumping next fall. All it would take is for Mr. Biden to act. For once, like the man he sold himself as in the election. Thank you, Kimberly Strassel. 526 right now, 55 Care City Talk Station. We mentioned Home Helpers, home care, helping you help the loved one that you help all the time on those times that you can't be there. I think about scheduling like a family vacation, or maybe there's a week that you're always. Five 31. Happy Friday. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. Pound 550 on AT&T phones. Real quick here, I'll get to Tom in just a second here. Hang on, Tom. Some Talawana school district students are not able to attend classes for the next four school days due to, they claim, the high number of COVID-19 cases in the classroom. According to the statement from the school district, Superintendent Edward Thoreau, the eighth grade class will not have in-person lessons beginning, I guess, today. Classes won't be back in session until Thursday, September, 23rd? This has got to be, that doesn't make sense. This article was published on the 23rd of September. That's yesterday. Anyway, so the decision to cancel in-person classes due to a high number of COVID-19 cases and many students being under quarantine. I suppose we're going to be seeing this a lot. Oh, and we've got another vax to win. Highlands age 12 to 15, eligible to win a $100,000 college scholarship for getting a COVID vaccine shot. Mike DeWine announced yesterday five $100,000 scholarships and 50 $10,000 scholarships given away over 5 days between October 11th and the 15th. Vax to School program is what it's called. Aims to inoculate young people at a time when the Delta variant is spreading. Says people who have already been vaccinated will be eligible. Will have to sign up for a drawing in advance. Scholarship paid with federal coronavirus relief money, of course. Says 46% of Ohioans age 12 to 15 have already been vaccinated, compared to 84% of Ohioans age 65 and over. K through 12 students, more than 32,000 of them tested positive or been diagnosed with COVID this school year. Governor DeWine said this age group has the most room to grow in getting vaccinated. With the Delta variant in our midst, is the group we're most concerned will miss in-classroom opportunities if they get or are exposed to COVID-19. So lotteries. Hospitalizations, apparently among 30 to 49-year-olds, are 50% higher than the winter surge, while people over age 70 are being admitted to hospitals at half the rate as in the winter. So younger people are ending up in the hospital more frequently. Again, citing the COVID variant. And finally, before I get to Tom, I just mentioned the have an award, I guess, to give out. Police have arrested a Springfield Township man who allegedly recorded the rape of a 15-year-old girl. This, according to documents filed in Hamilton County Municipal Court. Our award winner this morning, 20-year-old Joshua Stanfield, charged with rape, unlawful sexual contact with a minor, and pandering obscenity involving a minor. They say Stanfield made contact with the victim on Snapchat and sent her an Uber to pick her up and bring her to the Tri-County Mall where the two met. Once the victim arrived at the mall, he led her into a bathroom where he forcibly raped her. That, according to the affidavit from the Springfield police. Stanfield allegedly recorded part of the incident on his phone and threatened to post it if the victim told anyone. He is currently being held at the Hamilton County Justice Center on bond amounts totaling $220,000. He was arraigned yesterday morning. What do you think he's doing right now, Joe? Huh? What do you think? Anything? What do you think the inmates are treating this guy over at the Hamilton County Justice Center? Unbelievable. Tom, welcome to the program. Happy Friday.
Hey, happy Friday, gentlemen. We can only hope that that guy is getting exactly what's coming to him. So
yeah, karma.
Yes. As far as your talk about the Democrats' spending bill, aren't we just supposed to go along with it because they clearly have more compassion than everyone else?
That's what it's all about.
Right.
Yes.
So don't question it. Don't try to think through it. Just say yes.
Right.
Just nod your head. Oh, yeah. You guys love everyone more than anyone else.
That's what it's all about. Yeah. Look, we're doing something. Look, here's a pile of money.
We don't know what we're doing. We're not going to tell you what we're doing. You know that one quote that I don't know if it's a senator or a representative a while back, it wasn't that long ago, said something about if we give away the details too soon, then the opposition has time to. That's reality. I mean, they're little by little, they're just revealing themselves more and more for what they really are. Hey, one other subject here.
Real quick.
I don't know if you've noticed this or heard about this. Somebody that is listening right now listens on the iHeart Radio Media app, whatever.
Yeah.
And apparently when a particular subject is brought up, particular words are used, there is a the feed cuts out for like 10 or 15 seconds. And it seems to be, as far as he can tell, about every single time that these two words are used together. And we're going to keep track of this, but it's vaccine mandate. So we're actually paying attention to see if and I don't think the radio feed cuts out because I've listened to you and I've heard you say it I've heard other people say it. I haven't heard any cutout, but I will assure you
that we do not believe here at the 55 Guaranteed Morning Show that is actually happening, Tom. But I will say out loud, vaccine mandate, we can see if it cuts out on radio. Probably a conspiracy theory, Tom, probably a coincidence, but appreciate you bringing it.
Can you play John the Fisherman?
5:42, it's Friday. Let's say, And a happy Friday to you. Tech Friday with Dave Hatter. Ron Wilson coming up. Always like him, Ron. Jason Williams as well. And a bass riff. Apparently they put on a really good show, Joe. I know you didn't get a chance to make it to the Primus show, but the people that I know that went there said it was pretty awesome. Anyhow, over to the stack of stupid. South Carolina couple pleaded guilty earlier this year. It's important. They pleaded guilty earlier this year to multiple indecent exposure charges, one of which involved a sex act in a glass gondola on the Myrtle Beach Skywheel. They were arrested again for committing illicit acts in public. Can't stop doing it. Lori Harmon, she's 36. Eric Harmon, 37. booked into the Horry County Jail. That's spelled H-O-R-R-Y for folks keeping track at home, on indecent exposure charges. Married for 17 years, couple also charged with participation in preparation of obscene material. Arrest warrant states the Harmons in late July engaged in a sex act while inside a photo booth at an arcade. A video of Lori engaging in an act upon Eric posted on Twitter. Note the delicacy of my phrasing. FCC is always around. Lori also accused of exposing herself and participating in sex acts in another individual while on the front porch of the couple's residence. Guess they got what they call an open marriage there, Joe, huh? Eric charged with preparation of the obscene film that occurred at the incident location. Footage that was, of course, posted on Twitter. Harmon's arrested twice earlier this year in connection with a series of indecent acts, many of which they recorded in Myrtle Beach and nearby Surfside Beach. Details of the court filing. One of the pair's X-rated encounters occurred in January, as I mentioned before, inside a glass gondola of the oceanfront Myrtle Beach Skywheel. Video posted to a Pornhub site showed her exposing her breasts and performing a certain sex act on her husband, who, of course, has his genitals exposed. The act, investigators allege, occurred in full view of the public. Lori Harmon, she has a Pornhub page. Her Pornhub page once hosted about 140 explicit videos with more than 11,000 subscribers. Page noted that, quote, "We are a married couple and have been together for 18 years. We absolutely love sex and love getting risky in public," quote, unquote. April, they pleaded guilty to indecent exposure counts and were each sentenced to 3 years. Penalty the judge suspended in favor of a 2-year probation term. Arrest this week will likely trigger probation violation charges against the couple. At sentencing, defense attorney Stephen Grooms told the judge that the duo learned a tremendous lesson in what you can do at home versus what you can do in public. Excellent defense there, Stephen. The couple's Pornhub account has been deleted. Lori has an OnlyFans page that charges subscribers $10 a month. Fools and their money are soon parted. And idiots having sex in public are soon arrested. 545, 55 Care City Talk Station. Bond Furniture, beautiful downtown Lubbock is where you find Bond Furniture and Design. If you're planning on listener lunch with us now, coming up on 551, 55 Care City Talk Station. Coming at the bottom of the next hour, Tech Friday with Dave Hatter, and I'll jump to the phones at 749-5500, 800-823-TALK for a dive back into the stack of stupid. I got Patrick on the line. Patrick, welcome to the program. Happy Friday.
Hey, Brian, happy Friday to you.
Thanks,
too.
Man.
Happy belated birthday as well.
Ah, appreciate that.
Well, I had two theories on Biden. The first is why he doesn't have many press conferences, and that's because the other day they told him he had to brief the press, so he showed up in his underwear. And the second is that the reason he hasn't gone to the border is that they told him to make a run for the border, so he stopped at Taco Bell.
Taco Bell. Take care. Yeah, a little rim shot on that one. Got to be a naked guy. It's Friday, and therefore there is one. Of course, I'm referring to the stack of stupid. Oh, and to Tom who called earlier. You ready, Joe? We'll see if it works. Vaccine mandate. I wish people could see the look on Joe's face when I just like shaking his head, rolling his eyes. Anyway, officials from Ontario County Sheriff's Office see a man, this is in New York, arrested after being accused of jumping onto vehicles and, of course, naked. 31-year-old Damian Quinones,
as is tradition,
charged with public lewdness, authorities in the city of Quinones, if I'm getting that right, found walking south on State Route 364 in front of Pepper's Restaurant, naked and with no belongings. Arrested for public nudeness, transported to Clifton Springs Hospital for treatment for minor injuries to his elbow, sustained while jumping onto vehicles, plural. No damage caused to any vehicles, and say Quinones was issued an appearance ticket to appear in court at a later date. I think that means he was released on his own recognizance. We go to Nashville, Tennessee for this one. A woman came home to her South Nashville apartment on Saturday to find a naked man with a knife who told her to do what he wanted or he would kill her child. All right. Metro police reported the victim had just come home from work, was about to take a shower when she heard a noise coming from the kitchen area, where she found the suspect, 28-year-old Oscar James Aguilar, standing naked in the kitchen holding a knife. Reportedly told the victim to do what he wanted. If she reported the incident to police, he would kill her child. Victim fled to her bedroom, texted a friend for help, and officers soon arrived. Now, I'm going to pause for a moment here. Texted a friend for help, who then called officers. I think I would have gone directly to the police officers. It's just my recommendation. Just saying. Well, no, after I got the fire. No, the firearm would have been a given, Joe. I would have had that in my hand already as I was making the phone call.
Phrasing?
He was found inside the victim's bedroom, and the knife. Oh, my word, Joe. Do you know what color the knife was? It's actually in here. I cannot. This is more stupid than the subject matter of the story. It was a silver knife with a black handle. Found near the doorway, according to police. Yeah, I haven't seen one like that ever. Except, like, every knife for a kitchen that has ever been made, including the Ginsu's. Anyway, he was taken into custody and reportedly admitted he gained access to the apartment through the balcony. Booked into the Metro jail, charged with attempted rape and burglary, bond set at $75,000. Let's see here. Naked guy or weed mom, Joe? Naked guy. Got one more. Given the amount of time, he picked the right article. Authorities, we are in Center Point, Pennsylvania, where a Winburn man who was naked when he broke into a Phillipsburg home in May,
as is tradition,
assaulted a woman and choked a dog.
Phrasing?
I was waiting for that. He pleaded guilty to various charges yesterday. Court officials say 42-year-old David Bainey pled guilty to charges of strangulation, open lewdness, and animal cruelty. Troopers say in early May he was arrested after a woman said he broke into her home, removed his clothes, and strangled and threatened to kill her. Investigators say Blaney also allegedly choked his own dog.
Phrasing.
Thank you, Joe. During the incident and damaged several nearby vehicles. He was sentenced, or will be rather sentenced, in November. It's 5:55 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Stick around, make a phone call, 749-5500-800-823-TALK. Got some time for a few more items before we get to Tech Friday at 6:30. I hope you can stick around.
What is happening right now?
Infrastructure bill. We have a deal.
What's happening?
The Champlain Tower evaporated in an instant.
Know what's happening on 55 KRC, the talk station.
6:06 here, 55 KRC, the talk station. It is Friday, and a happy one to you. Tech Friday with Dave Hatter coming to the bottom of the hour, and we have the Disabled American Veterans going to join the program at 7:30 to talk about the centennial celebration with the Cincinnati Pops. That'll take place at Music Hall on September 28th, so we'll hear about that again at 7:30. Ron Wilson at 8:05 out of the garden into the studio. Always enjoy my time with Ron on a Friday. And Jason Williams from the Cincinnati Inquirer. On a couple of topics, we, of course, have this all-important mayoral race coming up very fast. And I like the headline, Jason Williams' op-ed piece in the Inquirer showing up on the 23rd this week. Defend the police versus defund the police. It's what Cincinnati's mayor's race is about. And, of course, David Mann will defend the police, while Aftab Perval probably would enjoy getting rid of them. I don't know what his overall theories and thoughts are, but he certainly is not supportive of Cincinnati law enforcement on a level that David Mann is. Okay, so that's our show this morning. Oh, and then the other thing is, what are we talking about? Issue 3, which will be on the ballot in November for those people who, the four people that will probably show up for the election anyhow. Hamilton County Republican Party came out in favor of it. So you have the Charterites and the Democrats saying absolutely no to Issue 3 and the Republicans saying yes. In a very blue city, I think you may know the direction that one's going to go. Anyhow, what else is going on in the world? I get just a whole bunch of different things. I did want to bring this up because so few people know what's in this allegedly $3.5 trillion budget bill that they're fighting over. And I say they are fighting over. The Republicans are lockstep against this. The Democrats can't even get their house in order. I talked about that in the last hour, and if you didn't get to hear it, excellent op-ed piece in the Journal today, Kim Strassel on that one. But they do a little breakdown of what is in it, and part of what is in it, and you're not going to believe this. Maybe we should get Jason Williams' opinion on this one later on in the program. The payroll credit for compensation of local news journalists. I kid you not. This subsidy bill, this monstrosity of a bill, gives print and digital publishers, news people, up to $50,000 a year for each journalist on staff. Claims the tax credit's capped at 50% of each employee's wage in the first year and dropped down to 30% thereafter. Finance Committee Chairman Ron Wyden saying democracy depends on original reporting, and local newspapers are responsible for more than half of that. And, of course, a lot of newspapers have shut down over the years. I mean, we can't avoid the reality of the Internet. It's impacted literally everything. I mean, grocery stores. There used to be mom-and-pop grocery stores all over the place. You know, those went the way of the dodo because of large, giant chains. Home Depot ended up putting the small hardware stores out of business. And, of course, Amazon putting literally everybody out of business. But they're going to give journalists 50,000 a year per journalist in tax credits. Publication can have no more than 750 employees to qualify. It also must, in their words, serve the needs of a regional or local community and employ at least one journalist living in the area. Can I just ask an out loud question? It seems pretty obvious on this. They're going to pay journalists. This is a completely left-wing concept. It is entirely owned, 100% lockstep by the Democrats who are behind it. Not all Democrats are even behind this entire monstrosity. Don't you think that might have a way, I mean, to the extent that they want this thing to be ongoing, that maybe it might sway an otherwise independent journalist to maybe, you know, paying a little lip service to the Democratic side of the ledger, maybe softening the blow to an article that might otherwise be damning to the Democrat Party? No, nothing to see here. Like a big fat payoff is what that is. In completely unrelated and other news, my Catholic friends out there, no, I am not Catholic, but I always enjoy talking about this struggle that the Democrat leftists who claim to be Catholic have in their position on abortion. Since we had Northern Kentucky Right to Life on just the other day to talk about their event, let's talk about Nancy Pelosi and her problems with the Archbishop of San Francisco, who's coming out swinging. Described as lashing out at comments made by the Archbishop of her church, Archbishop San Francisco. Salvatore J. Cordiglione. Sounds like something from a mob movie, doesn't it? Michael Corleone. Now, this is Cordiglione. Referring to the Democrats' effort to codify Roe versus Wade into federal law, because they see the Democrats believe that the writing is on the wall insofar as Roe v. Wade and its longevity. This current Supreme Court may very well properly overturn it and leave the issue to the states or come up with something else. But Roe v. Wade is, without talking about the underlying subject matter, one of the greatest illustrations of legislative drafting from the bench that exists. They literally wrote a law into a court opinion. And that in and of itself is wrong. That's not what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to discuss the actual law and whether or not the law itself passes constitutional muster. And if it doesn't, you say it's unconstitutional and it's no longer in effect, thus putting the ball back into the legislative branch's court to make a law that follows the constitutional framework. Courts aren't there to rewrite or write legislation. So that fundamental principle would provide grounds for the Supreme Court to overrule it. I don't know which direction they're going, but I think the Democrats are a little concerned about this, which is why they want to codify Roe versus Wade. This is what brought out the Archbishop, Salvatore J. Cordiglione, who said, quote, "This proposed legislation is nothing short of child sacrifice, and clearly in reaction, among other things, to the recently passed Texas heartbeat bill, which I'm guessing the Archbishop likes. Because Catholics, as a matter of doctrine and dogma, believe that a fertilized egg is in and of itself life, and therefore you're not allowed to take it away. That's God's job. So Pelosi comes out saying, I'm Catholic, in response to the Archbishop, I might point out. I'm Catholic. I come from a pro-life family. Not active in that regard. Different in their view of a woman's right to choose. And I am in my right to choose. I have five children. Does that make any sense, anybody? The Archbishop said the measure is surely the type of legislation one would expect from a devout Satanist, not a devout Catholic. Did the Archbishop just call Nancy Pelosi a devout Satanist? I think one can legitimately read that into the statement, can't one? Pelosi said the Archbishop of the city, that area, San Francisco, she's talking about it like she's not even from there. The Archbishop of the city, that area, San Francisco, and I had a disagreement about who should decide this. I believe that God has given us a free will to honor our responsibilities. For us, having a child was a complete and total blessing, which we enjoy every day of our lives, but it's not our business how other people choose the size and timing of their family. Isn't that interesting? And do you think that she would apply the same concepts to vaccine mandates, that it's a choice made by the individual? See, I said vaccine mandate again. I'm waiting for Tom to call back and tell me his friend was right. 6:15. Devout Satanist. Okay. 55 KRC. The 6:21 here, 55 KRC Talk Station. Happy Friday. Tech Friday with Dave Hatter coming up in a few minutes here. Bottom of the hour. Always enjoy that. David, you? And he agrees with me. All right, a couple of different things real quick here. I just so many different topics that one could talk about. But while it's still fresh in everybody's mind, we had these outrageous lies about the Border Patrol whipping people at Del Rio on horseback, whipping people. Who was it? Maxine Waters said it was worse than slavery. I mean, come on. Jen Psaki yesterday said it was horrible and horrific. And announced that I can also convey to you the Department of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, also conveyed to civil rights leaders earlier this morning that we will no longer be using horses in Del Rio. Not one image has been shown, not one video shown, and there are news reporters all over the place down there of anyone being hit with a whip or reins. No one. They were swinging them around in an effort to control their horses. Horses are used for crowd control all the time. This policy failure, Biden's failure at the border that resulted in all of these people massing and swarming toward the border, was brought about because everyone says the border is open. They pay lip service to a closed border, but the reality is, and they have the internet as well, they can see people. They can read about the policies of the Biden administration. They can know that they're going to be brought into the interior and released, maybe with a hearing date. You can't deny that's happening. It's a failure. If the images showed nothing but the throng of people leaning up against a fence, incapable of getting over or through it, and ICE agents rounding people up who illegally entered our country and pushing them back across the border from whence they came, then there would be a decrease in the number of people coming from the border, right? We had that under Trump. whatever your immigration policy is, you know, action, reaction. And Biden's actions in eliminating Trump's policies resulted in the reaction of more people than we can manage on the border. Therefore, horses were required to try to control the throngs and the masses of people, much in the same way I've seen happen in downtown Cincinnati and downtown Chicago, in downtown New York. I've witnessed horses being used to control crowds. That's what they do. They're good at it. Talk to a cop. Now we're getting rid of the horses and we're blaming the horses because of his failed policy. Policy failure results in a need for horses to control out-of-control mobs, blame horses, and call it racism. There you go, Biden's strategy. And here we go to John Kerry. This shows the administration's priority. Okay, yesterday or earlier this week, he was asked by a news host, David Weston, quote, they're talking about John Kerry. Another issue related to China is importing solar panels, because clearly a priority of the Biden administration is really addressing climate. But it's not the only priority. There are other things as well, such as the Uyghur situation in the West. What is the process by which one trades off climate against human rights? The Uyghurs are an oppressed population in China, parenthetically. Kerry's response, well, life is always full of tough choices in the relationship between nations. Ronald Reagan thought the Soviet Union was the evil empire, and he continually directed a lot of energy at getting the Soviet Union to change. He then went to Reykjavik, met with Gorbachev, and decided together, you know what, this doesn't make sense that we're aiming 50,000 warheads at each other, that we're always on the brink of potential conflict, and so they turned that around. But the point I'm making is that even as there were egregious human rights issues, which Reagan called them out on, we have to find a way forward to make the world safer, to protect our children and act in our interests. We can do and must do the same thing. Yes, we have issues, a number of different issues, but the first and foremost is the planet must be protected. We all need to do that for our people. I just want to point out real quick here. First off, you got the Soviet Union wrong. We didn't trade with them. We didn't embrace them as a trading partner. We weren't reliant on the Soviet Union for jack squat. And in fact, the Soviet Union didn't manufacture jack squat. They fell apart because their economic system was terrible. They lost all the treasure and lives in Afghanistan. That failed operation, repeated by us. And then their economic system didn't support all of their military operations. They couldn't afford to continue to manufacture warheads. Gorbachev went in there with nothing but his in his hand. Reagan called his bluff. Gorby conceded. And in an economic look in terms of conditions, Gorbachev made the right decision because, you know what, he wouldn't have to continue dumping more money than he had into his military operation. Next thing you know, the Soviet Union fell. Why? Maybe because we didn't trade with them. We didn't enter into Faustian bargains with our enemy to supply us with solar panels. We didn't prioritize something that is a theory that could happen 100-plus years hence and allow a bunch of Uyghurs to get slaughtered by the Chinese. Real lives dying and mistreated right now versus our continued relationship with China so we can buy solar panels. You do the math. 627, 55 KRC, the talk station. Tech Friday coming up. .632, 55 KRC, the talk station. It's Friday. That means Tech Friday with Dave Hatter. Brought to you by Intrust IT. Business Courier says they are the best IT company out there for any business looking for IT assistance. Dave, welcome back, man. Happy Friday to you. It's good to have you on.
Thanks, Brian. Happy Friday to you and Joe. I'm always happy to be here.
Protect your digital identity. Is that even possible? Every time we talk, we got problems with digital identity. It doesn't seem like it's even possible to do it, but I know you have ways to let my listeners know. Let us talk about them.
You know, Brian, it's to your point, it's getting harder all the time because we spend more time in the digital world. You know, as Joe and I were kind of discussing before we started here, he watched that movie, now I can't think of the name of it, the social, the thing all about how Facebook and all these social media sites.
Social Dilemma, he said.
Yeah, it suddenly just went blank and we just talked about it. I guess I need an extra Geritol before I go to bed at night. Anyhow.
Welcome to my world.
You can't escape this stuff and kids are spending so much more time online and you know, with people working from home, they're buying stuff online. You're just spending more time. You've got all these Internet of Things devices everywhere, your car, your refrigerator, your doorbell, your thermostat. All these things are collecting information. You're creating information both explicitly and then implicitly through what in the business is called data exhaust, you know, just the stuff that's thrown off by these devices merely being connected. So it is getting harder, but it's never been more important. And when we get to the last story, I think it's pretty interesting because it's HP did a big survey and you see people still have a real lackadaisical attitude towards this sort of stuff and, yeah. and just don't realize how much crime and fraud there is out there around it. So it's hard. It's getting harder. It can be done to some extent. And, you know, the first step with all these things, and it's one of the reasons why I appreciate you and Joe giving me the opportunity to do this, is just to raise awareness, to have people start thinking about, okay, I've got all this digital technology in my life. I use this stuff all the time. Am I thinking about what the possible consequences to me, my family, my organization could be if I don't attempt to at least have some base level of cybersecurity, and if I don't attempt to limit the amount of information that's out there about me? You know, the running joke forever, and it's true. It's been shown many times by experts that research this stuff that, you know, you go online, there's some sort of quiz, which Disney princess am I or whatever, and you enter all kinds of information
yeah.
that supposedly is going to help them determine which Disney princess you are. And while, you know, sometimes it's not, you know, malicious, that information in many cases is the kind of things you would use to answer security questions.
There you are.
It's information that could be used to impersonate you. You know, so
yeah,
it's being aware of those kind of things and then taking sort of a, you know, privacy and security first mindset and realizing you are at risk. Your organization is at risk. Your family's at risk. Cyber attacks are happening all the time. Bad guys are trying to get their hands on your information because the information itself is valuable, and then they can use it to do things like impersonate you and try to fool your coworkers, fool your family. So, you know, the more you're thinking about what can I do to limit that, the better off you're going to be. And again, the first thing is awareness. The second thing is stop, think, protect, right? Don't put out more than you have to. Be careful what you're doing. Understand that, unfortunately, risk is everywhere. And then it's all the stuff we talk about all the time.
All the time, you know,
use a virtual private network. Use a password manager. Use strong, unique passwords. Use multi-factor authentication. Use a privacy-friendly browser.
All right. In the interest of time, real quick here, so you point out that, and his notes will be on my blog page, so in case we're running through this a little quickly, but we're out of time in the segment. You say do a background check on yourself with a site like unmask.com. Just real quick, what does that do?
It's a free site. Now, it's a little wonky, but you can go in, enter some information about yourself, and it'll go out and search all kinds of public records and just dig up for most people, is a shocking amount of information that's available about them. So you can kind of see what's out there. You know, if you might have some issues in your background, or it turns up things that looks like it could be you but isn't, be good to know that before you go look for a job or apply for credit. So that, Google Alerts, there are ways you can get a pretty good view without spending a lot of money of what's out there. What could people find about you? Just from a, hey, I'm looking for a job. This is a Dave Hatter, but it's not this Dave Hatter you're looking
at. All right.
You know what I'm saying? That kind of thing.
I get it. Check out Dave's notes on that. Get a little more specifics. Coming up, Behind the One-Way Mirror, deep dive into technology of corporate surveillance with Deck Fridays. Dave Hatter, first, since AVA is offering opportunities to, well, .641 55KRC, the Talk Station. Happy Friday. Made always happier by the information we get from Dave Hatter, which we're doing right now. Tech Friday with Dave Hatter, brought to you by Entrust IT. All right, what's this deep dive into the technology of corporate surveillance?
So rather than me try to summarize this one, I figured Joe could just put a link out there to the Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF's website. You know, EFF comes up with a lot of important and useful information around cybersecurity, but especially privacy. And I thought this was really interesting because they do a quote deep dive by their own moniker here in this article into all the different ways you're being tracked. And as we've said, I don't know how many times on this show, Brian, that's not necessarily bad, right? I mean, there is an upside to some extent to the fact that you're being tracked all over, which is A, things can be customized and personalized for you based on what you like and where you go and what you do and that sort of thing. So that in and of itself is, you know, a potential upside. And in addition to the personalization, you know, you can then be delivered very tailored ads that potentially generate a lot of revenue for these sites and make it possible for them to provide things to you for free. Now, are they really free? Of course not, right? You're not paying with money. You're paying with data. You are the product, not the customer. But, you know, a lot of why everything is free, or a lot of things anyway, are so-called free on the internet is because these companies are monetizing your data and they're making stuff available to you because they need the data.
Yep.
So, but the downside of that, of course, then is that data is valuable not only to advertisers, but to bad guys, right? So, you know, the more data is out there, the more granular the profile they can build on you, the more they can custom tune what they're showing you, how much money they can make, how they can potentially influence you in subtle ways. And then, you know, that data sometimes is leaked, sometimes it's stolen, it's sold to other companies where it may be leaked or stolen. And this whole article basically goes into detail in four parts. Part one, whose data is it anyway? How do data trackers tie data to people? When they get into some deep dive around, you know, all the information that can be tracked about you, and, you know, from what's available through a web browser to what's available from an app on a phone. And, you know, since this article was written, some things have changed. Like Apple's introduced all this new stuff with the app transparency tracking framework to potentially limit some of that footprint. Part two, from bits to big data, what do tracking networks look like? Part three, data sharing, targeting brokers, and real-time bidding. And this is one of the things I think the average non-technical person doesn't really understand. There are data brokers out there, and they're buying and selling data between these companies, building ever larger, ever more detailed dossiers on people. And, you know, it's not necessarily bad on its own. But if that information is leaked, if it's stolen, if it's sold to the wrong people, you know, it has potential downsides for you. And then finally, what you can do to fight back against this. And they've got some great insight in there. In part four, fighting back on the web, on mobile phones, IRL, and then in the legislature. So, you know, what's going on out there? States like California have passed the California Consumer Privacy Act. There are other states that have similar legislation kind of in the pipeline. So this landscape is changing somewhat, but until we get to a different model where stuff is quote free unquote on the web, on your phone, through these platforms, the only way they can make money is through your data. And your data has value, it has power. The less of it that's out there, the better. And I think, you know, when you look at the direction Apple has taken with this, we're potentially heading to a place where this model could change and we end up where you have to pay for things. And frankly, I think that would be a good thing.
Agreed. Absolutely. You know, use tax.
Yes.
I'm willing to pay for a good or service as long as I get the good or service. And that's the end of the relationship. They don't continue to track me, follow me. I don't have good permissions. I don't have, let them have my cookies and all and on and on and on.
Yeah.
You know what? I hate legislation. I'm loath to tell businesses how to do their business, but I'm getting to the point where I wish there was a law in place which would give us the right to control the use of our own information. You know, just give me an on-off switch. Let me have the choice. If I don't want to have target marketing, if I don't want to have things tailored to me, then that should be my choice. Damn it. Dave, don't go away. Wrong.
Okay. Totally agree, Brian. Totally agree.
I didn't think I was going to get a disagreement from you on that one. Coming up, remote. Coming up on 651 at 55 KRC Talk Station, it is Tech Friday. Our friend Dave Hatter's on to help us protect ourselves, save ourselves from ourselves, and you shouldn't bypass inconvenient security measures. They're there for a reason, right, Dave?
Exactly. Exactly, Brian. That's right on the money.
And the theme of the show.
This is one of those things that I guess it's just hard for me to understand. Now, obviously, I work in the business. I have for a long time. I see lots of crazy stuff. I read about this stuff all the time. So I just, it's kind of hard for me to understand how people just don't seem to want to believe this. This was a recent study done by Hewlett Packard, or I guess now they just go by HP exclusively. I don't think Hewlett Packard is still a thing right out there. And it's pretty interesting. They surveyed 8,400 people, so a pretty good survey size. The survey is called Rebellions and Rejections, which I think is a pretty good title considering what it seemed to show. And included in that 8,400 people were 1,100 IT workers who had decision-making capabilities. So there's some interesting insights, both from the perspective of the people who are now working from home, thanks to the pandemic, or at least in some hybrid mode, as well as then the IT people who have to support them. And yeah, I mean, the overall big picture, as you can probably guess from the title, is that, you know, people just don't seem to get this and they don't do what they're supposed to do, which puts them and their organization and their family at risk. And I mean, some of this stuff is pretty shocking considering that you just keep seeing attack after attack after attack. And I mean, this is having real world impacts. From a different headline I found just while we were on break, this is from Forbes, why understanding cybersecurity is no longer optional for businesses. And here's the key takeaway. Ransomware has been getting worse for some time. A recent survey found 51% of businesses in America were hit by ransomware in 2020. 51%, so over half, with an average ransom demand of $178,000.
Whoa.
An estimated 25% of the victims chose to pay the ransom. So, you know, when people say this can't happen to me, you know, I have nothing to worry about, or probably one of the worst things, and I've actually been told this, oh, I don't care about any of that stuff. I have cyber insurance. Okay. So A, you're relying on the rest of us to take care of your business problems if and when you get hit, and you will if you do nothing.
Right.
And I would tell people who have that sort of mentality, check out what's happening in the cyber insurance business.
Yeah. I did a lot of insurance work when I was practicing law, and you know, there are exclusions and exceptions to coverage. And if you actively fail to engage in responsible measures to protect yourself, you may be denied a claim. I don't know if that's a condition of the policy, but if I was writing a policy, I'd sure have a risk adjuster come in there and check what the current cybersecurity status is at your company before I'd underwrite your policy. Jeez. Well,
that's exactly what's happening, Brian.
Of course it should be.
Are getting much more detailed questionnaires, surveys. They have to do audits and so forth to show how they're complying with good cybersecurity hygiene, things like the CIS controls or NIST cybersecurity framework, which that takes time and costs money to even do that. And then B, the premiums on these things are exploding. So getting back to the crux of this, again, when people say it can't happen to me, I don't care about this, it will happen to you if you do nothing. So here's a couple key stats from this survey. 30% of remote workers under the age of 24 said they circumvent or ignore corporate security policies that impede productivity. And, you know, that's where all of this gets so tricky, because I understand when nerdy old Dave in his tinfoil hat comes over and tells you got to do all this stuff, and then it makes it more difficult to get your job done. You know, there has to be some kind of balance there, because you can spend a lot of money and put in an enormous amount of security. You still won't be 100% protected against this stuff, and you can cause a lot of disruption and make it difficult for people to do their job. So there needs to be some collaboration. There needs to be some, balance in what people are doing. But to just basically say, oh, well, I'm just going to flout this stuff altogether, you know, you're basically creating a career-limiting move for yourself and possibly putting your company out of business as a result of doing these things. You know,
got to look out for your fellow employees, much in the same way the vaccine mandate argument works. You know, follow your cybersecurity or you'll end up, well, putting everyone out of a job. How's that for an argument, Dave?
Yeah. Here's a last quick stat. 83% of IT respondents believe the current state of remote security is a ticking time bomb. Now, these are the IT people, but there's a lot of stats in there. People ought to take a look at it. It's pretty disturbing. And, you know, folks have just got to take this stuff seriously and protect themselves
Amen.
As a result.
Amen to that. Dave Hatter, always appreciate your advice, sage wisdom. And intrustit.com is where find Dave and his crew online. Dave, until next Friday, have a wonderful weekend and week, and stay well.
Thanks, Brian. I hope you, Joe, and all your listeners do the same. And as always, thanks. I look forward to chatting with you next week.
Thanks, brother. Take care, my friend. 6:56 right now coming up. Bottom of the next hour, our disabled American veterans have a word with you about Centennial Celebration with the Cincinnati Pops at Music Hall. Got more to talk about. Your phone calls are also welcome. We'll be right back after the news.
Your latest news, traffic, and weather.
It's good to just keep you in the know.
Available on your smart devices. All you have to do is ask.
Hey, Alexa, can you tune in to 55 KRC in Cincinnati?
Here at 55 Care CD Talk Station, happy Friday. Always made happier, at least in spring and fall, because Ron Wilson joins the program. He'll be on at 8:05, 1 hour from now. We'll do a little light conversation, talk about gardening and what we need to be doing this fall in preparation for winter, etc. Nice break from politics and the craziness of the world. Jason Williams, back to politics and craziness of the world. He'll be talking about the choices for mayor. It is a choice between defending the police and defunding the police. On the defend the police side of the equation, we have mayoral candidate and preferred candidate David Mann. On the other side, of course, we have Avtab Perival, and God knows what he might do to the police department. He is one of those really leftist kind of guys. So not that David Mann is, you know, a conservative by any stretch of the imagination, but we do have choices, and it is a very important election. I can't emphasize that enough, and I'll continue to do it until the day after the election when we get to review the aftermath. Anyhow, that's in the 8 o'clock hour. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to learn about the Disabled American Veterans Centennial Celebration there at the Cincinnati Pops Music Hall. Details at the bottom of the hour. In the meantime, your phone calls are always welcome. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Pound 550 on AT&T phone. Recap what we talked about a little bit in the last hour. Can't use horses at the border anymore because, well, racism or something. And as I will sum up my ultimate point on this, Joe Biden's epic policy failure when it came to the border, getting rid of Donald Trump's protections that acted as a deterrent. It's like, you know, having to go to jail for committing crimes is a deterrent. That's why we have them. So it encourages people to mind the P's and Q's so they don't go to jail. Having a protected border and one that is protected is a deterrent to people who might come and try to cross it illegally. When you get rid of all those protections and people are living in squalid conditions by comparison to here, and when they know they can make it to our shores and automatically be hooked up to our social welfare system, they start doing it. And when they do it in numbers like we saw in Del Rio, you need crowd control. So the policy failure brought thousands and thousands of people to our southern border trying to get in. And there's basically a riot going on. So when next time you see a cop on a horse, you call him a racist? Cops use horses all the time because it's for crowd control. And not a single frame of footage shows any of those ICE agents whipping the migrants, in spite of the fact that, well, you'll hear that from leftist politicians. Biden administration just announced yesterday, well, we're not going to use horses anymore. So crappy failure in policy results in need for horses due to crowd being out of control. Left looking at each other, wondering how they're going to spin this, call it racist, and blame the ICE agents and the horses, and stop using horses. There you go. That's the Biden administration summed up. Cracked me up. Another one I talked about before, but it's worth bringing back up again. Chuckie Schumer. This is hilarious. He announced yesterday that they have a framework on how to pay for this $3.5 trillion monstrosity they're trying to shove down our throat, right? We got a framework, he says, joined by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Didn't give any details. None, in fact, no details. Just like word. The White House and the Senate have reached an agreement on a framework that will pay for any final renegotiated agreement. So see, in that sentence, Chuckie is saying that, well, we don't have a final negotiated agreement. We're still bickering amongst ourselves. But we got a framework on how to pay it. I don't know how you can figure out how to pay for it if you don't know the entirety of the package, but these are details that the Democrats don't want to talk to you about. And apparently they don't even want to talk about their own people. Pelosi following Chucky Schumer is talking about final negotiated agreement. Here it is. We got one, although he didn't have something to show you. She says the House and Senate and the White House came to an agreement on how we can go forward with the way to pay for this. She was asked what's in the framework. Her response, we have a consensus in overwhelmingly, maybe 10 to 1, 20 to 1 in our caucus as to these priorities, a higher percentage in the Senate. Further describing the quote-unquote framework as an array of agreements that we have, clarifying that we're finalizing the outlay side. Okay. Well, ignoring how light, loose, and detail-free the announcement was by Chucky and Nancy, they didn't bother letting the Democrats know about it. Key Democrat, and guy's been pulling Joe Biden's puppet strings, you know who he is, Bernie Sanders, a couple of minutes after the press conference is over, he said he wasn't included in the conversation about a deal to pay for it. Quote, I have no idea. Close quote, what's in the deal? He said he hopes to know what's in this so-called framework shortly, if one in fact exists. Yeah, you might want to bring Bernie into the mix. We don't think a whole lot of Bernie Sanders here on the 55 KRC Morning Show, but there's a whole chunk of the Democrat Party who thinks of him as a god. In fact, if the Democrat Party hadn't stabbed Bernie Sanders in the back, he would have gotten the presidential nomination, and that we all know how bad that would have gone. Senator Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia, who has been central in negotiations over this stupid bill, said he didn't even have the, in his words, foggiest idea about the framework when Schumer announced it. What? How can this be? Anyhow, over to the $3.5 trillion bill and why it's not $3.5 trillion. And this is the gimmicks that government plays, people in government, left and right. I'm going to throw darts at both sides of the political ledger because both of them do this kind of crap. And again, there's a great breakdown in the Wall Street Journal today. $3.5 trillion is a phony number, is the editorial board. But they did a wonderful job of just talking about in little bits and snippets the tricks and the gamesmanship that is played in order to bring about something that looks like it could be paid for and the political gamesmanship that's built into it. Child care allowance, all right? They said it's one of the most expensive provisions in the bill, extending the $3 to $3,600 per child payment for 10 years, and that's what the CBO does, right, will be $1.1 trillion. All right? Democrats have hidden the real cost by extending the allowance. Here's where the gamesmanship comes in. That's a lot of money. That's going to make this $3.5 trillion bill into something more like $8 trillion. Nobody will ever buy into that. Well, all you do is extend the allowance through 2025. So you only have to deal with that for a small window of time here. So if the Republicans gain control of Congress, which the Democrats, I think, believe is going to happen. So that's 2024. Enter calendar year 2025 when this allowance stops. People have been getting this $3,000 to $3,600 per child allowance, and then all of a sudden the Republicans take part and it disappears. Guess who's going to get blamed? Republicans didn't write this termination provision in there. They have nothing to do with this bill. But you know damn well the Democrats are going to blame the Republicans. Oh, they refused to extend it. Well, if you wanted it permanent, why didn't you put it in your bill? That's because it would have looked like it would cost too much. Anyway, price tag $110 billion every year after if it was extended. All right. They're shifting the cost of Medicare expansion. They keep telling you, we're going to expand it. Hearing benefits, dental benefits, well, they phase in those. So the CBO rates it differently because in the piece of legislation, the hearing benefits start kicking in over a two-year period. $20 billion a year is the price tag they pegged on that one. The dental benefits that they're promising you, when does that kick in? 2028.
they'll deliver in 2028. Now, what's that do? Well, the CBO is rating things based upon a 10-year projection. So they call it a savings. By not having a kick in at the outset, they call that saving $420 billion for over 10 years. Okay, the benefit kicks in 2028. What about all the years after that? Beyond the 10-year window. Yeah, fat costs. Universal child care entitlement, $90 billion to the states, but only between 2022 and 2027. There's more, but you get the idea. Gimmicks, scams, and ultimately more government control. Let's get your kids in a government-run school before they're old enough to go to kindergarten. Yeah, that's a great idea. USA Insulation, in fact, is a great idea. I had my tongue in my cheek for that last comment. But .721 right now, 55 Care City Talk Station. Putting some love together for the disabled American veterans at the bottom of the hour in lieu of local stories. And, of course, Ron Wilson and Jason Williams in the 8 o'clock hour. In the meantime, phones, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 if you have an AT&T phone. Let's go over to the phones right now. Got Opie on the line. Opie, happy Friday.
Hey, happy Friday to you, bud.
Thanks, man. What's on your mind today?
Well, I got a couple things. First of all, that whole horse deal down there in Texas is a load of crap.
Yes.
My wife was on the Warren County Search and Rescue Team for, as has been a few years ago. We have horses. Well, she has horses. I hate horses. You put $50 bills in one end, and you know what comes out of the other.
Oh yeah. You got to be really wealthy to own a horse.
They're good burners.
Or take a vow of poverty as to every other aspect of your life.
They say the way to make a million dollars on horses is you start with $2 million.
Yeah.
But at any rate,
it's like owning a boat.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Except a boat that you have to care for every single day. You know, somebody's got to be there to wash and clean it and clean up after it and feed it. You can park a boat and leave it. It'll still cost you money, but go ahead, Opie. I'm sorry. Just going off on a tangent.
Well, you know, I mean, they go out to Caesars Creek and do all their stuff, and, you know, Caesars Creek State Park, and they had to go out, and they went out and found a missing kid. And, you know, the kid got lost out in the woods.
All right.
But then also, for crowd control.
There you go.
I don't know if you ever watched the show Cops at the end of Mardi Gras.
Yes.
They line them up in the street.
Yes.
Stir up the stirrup and push everybody out of town.
Listen, back when I used to do the cop show. Back when I used to do the cop show, we had mounted police here talking about it. The horses are great for crowd control. That's what they're used for.
Not everybody's been around a horse, and when you get a 12 or 1500 pound animal staring you in the face, you ain't going to argue with it.
And one that is considered a police officer, because if you get violent with a mounted patrol, you are going to face assaulting a police officer style charges.
That's the same thing as messing with a cop.
Yes,
dog.
Exactly. So
and now on this spending deal.
Yeah.
This sounds about like my wife when she comes home from Kohl's with a bag full of shoes and said, honey, I just saved you $200.
I know.
Well, how'd you do that? Well, I bought $500 worth of shoes, and it only cost me $200.
I know.
It was on sale.
Right.
It was on sale. I mean, this is the same. I mean, I don't know where this is coming from. I mean, it comes
from the hearts and minds of the left who rely on the general overall. I'm not going to say stupidity because I don't think just because you don't pay attention to any given day in politics and you're not interested in living in the weeds where I tend to dwell on political matters. A lot of people just ignore this and it sneaks by them. They will listen to the sound bites they hear on CNN and just believe that's the entire picture being presented to them. They don't know that, you know, the provisions within the bill terminate under their own terms and that that's going to result in this benefit that they're going to be relying on for the next several years ending, or that the total cost of the bill really isn't $3.5 trillion because of budget gimmicks and because of the CBO's seemingly artificial time constraints on valuing the cost of a bill at 10 years. It just flies right past. And the failure to appreciate exactly what $1 trillion is versus a billion or even a million. A million, times 1,000 is a billion. A billion times 1,000 is a trillion. We're talking $3.5 billion. Do the math. It's insanity. Appreciate it, Obi. 725. Get your cancer screening. It's a prostate cancer awareness month. It is 7:30 right now, 55KRC, the talk station. Happy Friday. Always made happier because Ron Wilson's in the studio at 8:05 and Jason Williams in a little more than an hour to talk about the AFTAB, Perval, David Mann, battle over police department, and the Republicans supporting Tom Brinkman's charter amendment. In the meantime, I am pleased to welcome Dan Clare to speak on behalf of the Disabled American Veterans and the Centennial Celebration. Hey, Dan, welcome to the program. Happy Friday to you, sir.
Happy Friday to you, Brian. Thanks for having us.
Are you kidding me? Anything I can do to help veterans' causes, any type, I'm here for it. It's one of the reasons we have a 55KRC morning show. And since Joe and I get to decide what's on it, we put veterans events on it. And this is Disabled American Veterans. First of all, explain to my listeners what the Disabled American Veterans do for the Disabled American Veterans, and we'll get on to the celebration.
Sure. DAV is, we were founded here in Cincinnati. We're really proud of that. We're a charity. We're nationally based, but we're right across the river here in Kentucky. We help veterans get their benefits. We help provide rides, transportation to and from hospital appointments. We're out there helping veterans get employed to help them connect with jobs. And of course, we're a voice for them in Washington, D.C. as well.
And your website is?
DAV.org.
How easy is that, folks? DAV.org. So if you're like, well, wait a second, I could really use one of those services, there you go. Just get in touch with the folks there through DAV.org. Now, on to the Centennial Celebration. We've got the Cincinnati Pops going on here.
Cincinnati Pops. Yeah, we're really excited about that. It's going to be Tuesday night at 7 p.m. at Music Hall. Tickets, thanks to some donors, Bob McDonald and his family, or some of them, have made tickets free for the concert.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, folks are able to go onto dav.org/pops. They can connect and get some free tickets. We have American Idol star Melinda Doolittle is going to be performing, the West Point Glee Club, and Craig McKee is going to be the MC for the event. A lot of people don't know him at Channel 9. He's an Air Force veteran, and he's helping us out, too.
Oh, that's fantastic. And the wonderful Cincinnati Pops, I mean, they're you know, I think people often overlook and take for granted how wealthy we are in terms of the arts in this city, you know, and that we can go to events like this. I bring that up because I lived in Chicago for 8 years, and while they have arts and they have events, first off, really expensive. And second off, with the size of the population relative to the size of the venue, quite often it's almost impossible to get a ticket to something. So here we have great events with the opportunity for pretty much anybody to go.
Yeah, the Pops are world-class, and we're really excited. We're going to have veterans kind of doing vignettes in between the patriotic songs they're going to be doing. JMR, of course, does a fantastic job. We're just really excited to get it going and finally celebrate our centennial. We were founded in 1920 by a fellow UC grad, Robert Marks. I'm sure you're familiar with his library up there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so 100 years of DAV, 100 years of keeping promises. We're just really excited to get things going.
Well, that sounds like a great event. Of course, everyone's going to love the Pops. 7 p.m. Tuesday, get your free ticket, dav.org/pops. And if you're interested in, you know, taking advantage of some of the services they offer veterans, feel free. That's what they're there for, and for 100 years. Dan Clare, on behalf of all my listeners, and most notably those who are veterans and have veterans in their family, I can't thank you enough for what you guys are doing all throughout the year and for spreading the word this morning about the celebration next Tuesday.
Thank you so much, Brian. It's an honor to serve.
It's a real pleasure having you on, my friend. We'll do that again next time you got an event. You know where to call.
Great.
Dan, fantastic. Have a great week. Stay well. 7:34 right now, 55KRC, the talk station. What do you think about Cincinnati Public Schools are having a meeting today? and they're talking about mandating vaccines. /7:41 and a happy Friday to you. Looking forward to Ron Wilson at the top of the hour news. People getting a little better out of shape about this one. I guess I can understand. I guess the first person to announce that he was talking to Fox 19, Mike Murawski. Looks like they, hey Joe, looks like they were interviewing while he was on one of his daily marathon walks, walking down the street. Anyway, today they're going to meet to discuss a COVID 19 policy for eligible students. And it's still going to have to be voted on and approved by the board, but this is being brought up today, and I presume it's being brought up by Mike Murawski since he's the one that was talking about it. So they meet at 9 a.m. today. As of right now, COVID-19 vaccine is available for anyone 12 and older. Pfizer said earlier this week that its vaccine works for children ages 5 to 11 and is seeking U.S. authorization for that age group. So, before authorization is granted, the Cincinnati Public School Board will be sitting down to discuss mandating it for your 5 to 11-year-olds. Now, Ohio law already says you can't force vaccines on that are not fully approved by the FDA. You can't do that. But if Pfizer does get approval for 5 to 11-year-olds, then that's when they're going to start trying that. Murawski said all students would have to get vaccinated if the policy is approved unless they are granted an exemption. He pointed out Americans with Disabilities Act, religious exemption, etc. But if you're in that category, he is pointing out that you're going to have to get tested every single week. Now, who else is doing this? Almost no one. Who else is demanding that the children in the schools be vaccinated? The Los Angeles Public Schools, they approved a vaccine requirement for children 12 and older. Cincinnati Public Schools, thank you Fox 19 for the fun fact. Cincinnati Public Schools will be the first district east of the Mississippi River to implement a student vaccine policy. Mike Murawski actually brought that point up. Is he proud of that? And I'm going back to the point, they've got you over a barrel. I will find it a little difficult to swallow, in spite of the fact that I encourage you, if you are a religious person, to go ahead and assert a religious exemption. This is one of the libertarian things for me because, you know, who is it for to determine how religious you are and, you know, what constitutes a valid religious objection or not? No one. If you're of a religion, I bet you make fun of people who are of another, different religion. Or you don't believe them and you think they're damned or going to go to hell or I don't know. So you're standing and you're going, well, you stupid person with your stupid ideas about religion. I saw a priest or a rabbi or an imam or a minister or somebody from some religion. Oh, it was definitely Christian religion because someone posted it on Facebook, and I remember him talking about your duty under the obligations of Christ basically obligate you to get a vaccine. And he was really demonizing anybody who claims that a religious exemption exists for the vaccine. This is a man of the cloth in the Christian world, saying that the way he interprets Scripture says you must get the vaccine. It's part of Jesus' teachings. All right, he's entitled to that belief. He's entitled to his opinion. And yet how does the entire Church of Christian Science respond to a guy like that when their review and interpretation of Scripture says that you shouldn't do it? Have fun working it out, folks. You know what I'm saying? But now the children, and they're stuck. So the religious exemption aside, if you are, obviously, if you react to vaccines, you got some medical condition, these clearly are unobjectionable reasons for not getting the vaccine. Everybody's stuck on the religious exemption because it's so, you know, kind of iffy. And well, you'll still take a flu vaccine, but, you know, well, okay, all right. Prove it. But I find most offensive is this, and it's like your employment being contingent upon getting a vaccine. You are going to not be able to pay your rent. You're not going to be able to buy groceries because you don't get a vaccine. Now you're not going to be able to get an education. They're taking away the already paid for tax dollars that came out of my check and your check and your neighbor's check that go to the schools already. Regardless of vaccine status. In fact, I would argue that if you aren't allowed to put your kids in a public school because of the lack of the vaccine, they should give you your tax dollars back. 746 55KRC, the talk station. Mike, hang on. I'll take your call right out of the gate if you can hold. I got to mention Cullen Electric because you only. .751 right now here at 55KRCD Talk Station. We'll be catching ourselves a Crime Stopper bad guy of the week here in a couple minutes. But first, I promise Mike, if he held, you'd be talking to him, and we're going to do that right now. Ron Wilson up after the top of the hour news. Hey, Mike, thanks for holding. Welcome to the program. Happy Friday to you.
Thanks for taking my call. That vaccine's only been approved for emergency use for kids. So it's not like it's okay.
They said that in the article. That's why I was kind of reacting to Mike Murawski bringing this up now. They're planning for the day when the Pfizer vaccine gets approved on a non-emergency basis for children ages 5 to 12. So this is in anticipation of that moment in time, to the extent that moment in time actually comes. Right now, under Ohio law, you can't force a formally approved vaccine on anybody. So, yeah, this is for approved vaccines only.
And that $3.4 trillion is more of the cloud and let's overwhelm the system. So it's the quickest path to socialism because it can't be maintained.
Oh, without question. That to me is, I think, the ultimate goal, Mike. And I know people think I'm some kind of conspiracy theorist, but they're so stupid at economics that they have to be nefarious, right? There's no way anybody doing the math on this spending with almost $30 trillion in accrued debt can justify and validate and say you can pay for another $3.5 trillion on top of the $1+ trillion infrastructure bill, et cetera. We're talking $6, $7, $8 trillion in the final analysis. The printing press is running. As it was pointed out the other day by Congressman Davidson, I believe it was, there's nobody in the world that's going to loan us this much money. It's not out there and available to borrow, which means it's going to have to be printed, which has an inflationary effect. See Venezuela, see Weimar Republic, see Zimbabwe, see all the other illustrations of someone trying to run a printing press into prosperity. So why would they do this? Well, they want us to crash and burn. Like Phoenix out of the ashes is going to rise some sort of socialist come communist mecca where from each according to his ability to each according to his need is going to be an actual working political philosophy for the first time it's ever been tried. Definition of stupidity, doing the same thing over and over again, repeatedly expecting a different result. Take care, Mike. Time for Larry's Lock, Safe, and Security. And thanks to Larry's Lock, Safe, and Security, I got a safe from them. Man, that thing is awesome. They sponsored the segment.
They're called smart devices for a reason.
I'm only as intelligent as what you put in me.
If you want to do the smart thing,
just tell your smart device to play.
55KRC, the talk station.
Another reason to be happy about Fridays, moving away from politics and talking gardening with the man, the myth, the legend that is Ron Wilson. He's bad. He is nationwide. He's got the most popular garden program in the country, and we hear it every morning here at 55KRC, the talk station on Saturday, and we get him every Friday at 8:05 in the spring and the fall for a little while, and I always appreciate it. Ron, it's great seeing you, man.
Dear, are you enjoying the weather?
The beginning of my weekend begins right now, as
cool.
far as I'm concerned.
Cool.
Talking to you and Jason Williams, you know, it just makes the 8 o'clock hour.
Cruise on out.
Yes.
Get in your car, have a nice drive home.
Yes.
And the fun begins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun begins when I get cool. in the garage and get my car downstairs. So yeah. let's talk. What are we doing? I seated. I got my seed down.
Good for you.
To fill in where the army worms devastated my lawn. So cool. While I put the seed down, it ended up being like 4 or 5 pound bags or something. I mean, we had a lot. So I'm
is it
happy.
Coming back though?
It hasn't been down long enough. It's only been down a few days.
The crowns recovering from the turf that was there.
The crowns that survived did.
Okay.
The areas that were devastated did not. I mean, I know you said that they did not eat the crowns, and right. I wish that was the case for a lot of areas in my yard. Nothing grew back.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, I know. But whatever.
I had an interesting question come up, and I actually consulted Joe Boggs just because I
– Buggy Joe Boggs.
Buggy Joe, just to make sure I was thinking on the right same plane as him. But and believe it or not, Joe is actually a turf specialist. That was his – background, and he got into entomology as well.
Good man to know.
My question was, I had a couple people saying, you know, we had armyworm damage. We're going to do some seeding and all that. Can we core aerate still through that area?
Yeah.
Even though the armyworms have done that, is it a good thing to go through and core aerate that? And as a matter of fact, the one lady worded it saying, you know, what would that do to the armyworms if they were still there? I said it would be a good thing because it'd chop them up in pieces and then, you know, take care of that. But the more I thought about whether I would core aerate in a situation like that, you know, we core aerate typically in the spring or fall when the lawn is actively growing. Because when you core aerate, you're actually, you know, damaging some of the roots.
Oh, sure.
You know, you're pulling plugs out of there.
It's like half-inch holes in the ground.
Yeah, and it takes 10 days, the lawn recovers right back again, and it's the best thing in the world you can do for your lawn. But in a case like that where those crowns are really struggling to come back, and, you know, is it worth going in and core aerating if you're not, you know, especially if you're not going to seed or whatever, you just want to core aerate and feed. And my thought was probably not, because it's already under stress and trying to recover. It doesn't have any grass blades on top, you know, so should we just leave it alone? And so we kind of went back and forth and both agreed that probably would be best to not core aerate those areas and put additional stress on the turf that's still there and still trying to recover.
All right. Okay. Here's a follow-up on that. Mm-hmm. And I understand the logic of that. What about where there are no crowns left?
Yeah. Then
and
that's,
it's just
that's not,
dead grass.
Yeah. If it's not recovering, then you're good to go.
You can core aerate the whole yard then, even the parts that's dead, and seed it.
You can core aerate the areas that where the army worm was. We're just saying that, you know, it will add additional stress to that as it's trying to come back up.
Stress so on something dead is not stress.
But stress on something dead is a different story. So, you know, so it'd probably be best if you didn't do it in those particular areas. You can do the rest of the yard. Just don't do it in those particular areas.
Can you core aerate and seed?
Well, absolutely. As a matter of fact, you know, a lot of folks will talk about it because, well, now I got these holes there and I'm dropping the seed down in the hole. Well, you do lose a few seeds down in the holes. There's no doubt about it. But I like to core aerate, let those dry for a day or two, rake those back out, then come back in and either slice seed or if you're overcast, broadcast seeding, fine. But slice seed in a couple days later. I still like to take the opportunity to put some kind of a really fine compost. If you can do that as a light top dressing, kind of fall down in those holes as well, then come back and seed. Are you going to lose some of the seed down the holes? Absolutely. But can you do it all within the same 2 or 3 day period? Absolutely.
Okay. Right.
Not an issue. And then you come right back with your starter fertilizer or regular fertilizer, and you're good to go. And there's still time to do that. And I think the point is, you know, we try to, you know, for Ohio, the state of Ohio State University always likes to put in August 15th through September 15th as the perfect time for seeding cool season grasses. And you can go longer into the season with the turf type tall fescues, some of the rye now, because they germinate a little bit quicker. Bluegrass, once you get past the 15th of September, it takes such a long time to germinate. It starts to slow down. The temperatures are dropping now. The days are getting shorter. Germination time takes longer, so they like to get that bluegrass in as soon as you can. So I've always said, you know, middle of August through the end of September, first week of October,
mm-hmm.
and bluegrass included. You do take a chance with the bluegrass. So we still have time. We still got a couple weeks here of good optimum seeding time. So if you haven't done it yet, and a lot of folks haven't, they haven't gone out and done anything yet, you still have time to do that. So, you know, yeah, and that's the top of my list today was you got good moisture in the ground right now with all the rain we've had. So if you're looking to core aerate, if you're looking to slice or slit seed, put fertilizer down, boy, you couldn't ask for better conditions right now to go out and do that. And we're going to get maybe some little showers in the morning, possibly. Not much. They're saying less than a quarter of an inch scattered around the area. You've got an excellent weekend and set you up for early next week for doing this type of thing because, you know, moisture is the key to the success here. So you got it made. And I'm looking at temperatures next week. I think all of them are in the 70s, upper 70s.
Yeah.
And nighttime temperature staying very cool. So temperature-wise, everything, you're right on. So if you haven't done it yet, you're there. Don't waste. And again, falls for planting, you've got good moisture in the ground right now. If you haven't started doing any of your planting or transplanting, it just set you up for the perfect weekend and the perfect week next week to get out and get this, you know, start getting that taken care of. Somebody had asked this morning about when is the driest months typically in Ohio. And I think based on the averages, it's typically October, and I think February falls in that. They're pretty close to each other. It's the two driest. So we get into October, it's sometimes a little bit drier, but when we do get rainfall, drier meaning the amount of rainfall, it lasts longer because it's a lot cooler, typically. So, you know, but again, we're set up right now for absolutely wonderful time to get out and start doing all of this, especially the lawn care. And remember, September's turf month. This is it. You know, early October, you know, again, you're starting to, anytime you get into October, the window starts to close.
Right.
So you're taking your chances from that point forward, but you got time now. So get out and take care of it this weekend or next week if you can't get it this weekend, but, you are there. But I just, you know, the thing about the core air rating, the lawn, if it is recovering, now in your case where it's not recovering, not an issue. But if it is recovering, you probably just don't want to add the extra stress.
Okay.
And not care, just do everything else in the yard except for that.
Fair enough.
And go from there.
Relative to nothing, I thought I would let you know. I'm really excited. I have wanted for years and years and years a hammock for the backyard.
Yeah.
And I knew exactly where I wanted it, and I always, you know, kind of, I bring
in,
it up.
You came in and bolted through two big trees? And...
no, I'm going to put up a 6x6 in concrete and use that as one end, and, you know, put decorative hooks on it so we can hang plants and planters from it.
Cool.
And then have the hammock suspended from there over to our birch tree.
Mm-hmm.
Nice and shady spot. It's a perfect spot in the yard for it. All these years, you know, I've kind of hinted. I've said, oh, boy, I'd love to have a hammock. I got one for my birthday this week.
Oh, good for you.
I'm so happy and excited.
Excellent.
About it. Yeah. Going to go out and buy the 6x6 this weekend and my couple bags of concrete, and I'm on my way.
Have your son put that in for you?
I'm going to do it.
Oh.
Yeah. I can manage.
Well, figure out the rest of the birthday present. He can put it in. Put
well, that's actually true. I could. I do own my own post hole digger. So I'm
do you really?
Yes, I do. Manual kind.
You know, post hole diggers work for planting plants.
I imagine they do.
I mean, there's a lot of people who use post hole diggers to plant their tomatoes because they like to go down a little bit deeper, you know, and to plant them deeper. So they'll use post hole diggers to do that. So,
yeah.
I look at post hole diggers, I get real sore.
They're not fun.
When I was a kid growing up and we had the farm, when we first got the farm in Indiana, we went through and put up all new fence, and it was two stake posts, then a wood post, two stake posts, then a wood post. And I was pretty young back then. But, man, doing that, and it was all done by hand.
Uh-huh.
And you stretch that string across there, and you said, we wore out a few of those, you know. I believe it or not, I have one from my great-grandfather.
A post-hole digger?
Yeah, that's a single turn, twist post-hole digger.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, from way back when. And this thing is so
like
old.
Like a corkscrew kind of thing?
Yeah,
oh, my God.
Yeah, that used to turn it by hand like an auger and turn it down and do it that way. And
I
was given that one and an old hoe of his. That he would replace the handle from a branch, and the handle right now is from a branch out of a tree.
Oh, I get it. I was going to ask you what her name is, but
no, it's pretty cool, but it's almost worn down. But it was his original garden hoe, and they did like an acre of vegetable garden back then. I mean, you had the mules and all that kind of stuff, but they grew for eating year round.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. But anyway, yeah, post hole diggers, they make me sore every time I look at one.
You know, what makes me sore is the same reaction is. The rototillers, and I have this.
A rototiller's like, can really wear you out.
Vietnam flashback when we first moved in the house, but the year after, Paulette wanted to put a garden in. And we're talking, this is after they had destroyed like they always do when they build a house, they steal all of the old soil that was on the ground and go away and sell it. So you have to buy it back or build it up over time.
Right.
So I'm dealing with plain old clay.
Yep.
And it was a terrible hot day. And I'm trying to get this blank and rototiller to get through there. It is beating me up. And so I have these flashbacks. I think that's my definition of either hell or purgatory. Me on a hot August day kind of day having to do the rototiller. 816, 55 KRC, the talk station. More with Ron Wilson. He brought plants of the week, too. We'll get that in the last segment. And then Jason Williams at 840 on some local
This is a hybrid. This is a cross, bluegrass, Kentucky bluegrass, featherbed bench, and Northern California sensimine.
Now legal in many states. 821, the 55 KRCD talk station. Some positivity from Joey Ramone. Plant a tree. Right, Juan Wilson? Plant a tree.
Well, I'll tell you what. You see the leaves are green out there, but they're going to start to change now.
Oh, yeah.
Just watch what happens. And it's amazing how the, you know, again, you know, the fall now officially is here. What was it, 22nd or whatever, Thursday or Wednesday at 3:23 or whatever it was. Anyway, it's officially here. But when you start getting cooler nighttime temperatures like we're now experiencing, warm, sunny days, that's when it really sets you up for fall, you know, fall color starting to happen. Start to watch the locusts and the ash and all and the cherries. Those are the early colors. And they're already starting. And it's just amazing what it'll do in a 2 or 3 day period. All of a sudden, you start to see those yellow leaves on the inside, and then start to work the way on the outside. But this kind of weather will certainly set us up for leaf drop coming along here very shortly.
You just start from being in my hammock underneath that birch tree I told you about.
The birch will be one of the first ones there to drop, too. So
no,
as you're sleeping,
it drops throughout the whole year.
You might want to have a little mask over your face, those little plastic shields, because you're going to be dry. Yeah, some leaves are going to be falling on you. But I want to, you know, this is going to start to happen. So enjoy the colors. But I also want to remind everybody, as you're mowing, just keep mowing those back into the grass, especially right now when it's a light drop. A lot of people get scared about mowing those leaves back into the turf. But it's just a light drop as we're gradually getting into it. Keep mowing them back. Keep mowing them back. If you get to a point where you get scared about it, then collect them up, finely ground leaves, and put them in a compost pile.
No.
Put them in a vegetable garden. I got religion
from you on this one, man.
For years,
she made me blow them into the corner, and they went to the mulch pile and all that.
Yep.
And you said, just mow them in. You can mow into what?
Six to eight inches deep
worth of leaves. You can mow right over. Yeah. I got a mulching mower to right over those damn things. I never have to rake a single one of them.
It's the way it should be.
It's got nitrogen, nutrients for the soil. It's good for
organic matter, the whole nine yards. Earthworms love you for it.
You just tell me it didn't hurt the lawn to do it. That was it.
And scientific research has proven it now. It used to be kind of a gut feeling. Now scientific research even shows. So, again, keep mowing them back in. Don't send the kids out there or you go out there and try to rake those up, unless you're collecting them to put in the compost pile or to put in the vegetable garden until then, because they're great soil amendments. But even if you're doing that, you still want to chop them up. Finely ground leaves will break down a lot faster for you, and it just turns into black gold for you very quickly. But, again, that's going to start to happen, so keep that in mind. Now, we're also starting to get cooler nighttime temperatures. If you have a Christmas cactus that you've grown for years and you just can't get that thing to flower, remember two things that happen. Well, three things, actually, that get a Christmas cactus to flower for you. One is you kind of start letting it go on the dry side. So you let it stay drier a little bit longer, start to stress it a little bit. Two is, as the days get shorter, they're also daylight sensitive like poinsettias.
Yeah.
And that helps to set buds. But the biggest factor is cooler temperatures at nighttime. If they experience those cooler temperatures down into the 50s and upper 40s like that for 10 days or 2 weeks, that really helps us set up those flower buds. So a lot of folks that have their Christmas cactus out on the patio during the summertime will leave them out right now, let them enjoy these cooler temperatures, and then that really does help to set up those flower buds when you bring it back inside.
But the daytime, the light has a whole lot to do with that,
right? They're also daylight sensitive. So as the days are getting shorter, obviously.
That's the thing.
Now, with the poinsettias, you know, if you have them inside in the house, which you should at this stage, the thing is now you start to limit them to daylight just from sun up to sun down. So once the sun goes down, your lights that come on inside the house will affect that, and they won't necessarily turn colors. That's why we put them in a closet or cover them up with a bag or a cardboard box or something to make sure we limit that daylight hours to a certain amount of time.
8-12 hours?
Yeah. Right now you can just go sun up to sundown. That's the easiest way to do it. And days are going to get shorter. But that's why we do that indoors, because those lights will actually throw it off. But those cooler temperatures for that Christmas cactus, in many cases, seems to be a real key to getting those things to set up and flower for you. And it's probably one of the easiest houseplants you can grow.
One more segment with Ron Wilson, followed by Jason Williams on local politics. After a word for Plum Tight Plumbing. Residential plumbing is never easier, never better than Plum Tight Plumbing. The only people you need to call, because they don't charge a service fee. That's the initial, you know, draw right there. You're not going to get left with a bill by a plumber that maybe just doesn't click with you. Hey, 3055KRC, the talk station. Remember, when you can't listen live, find the podcast at 55KRC.com. And always make sure you're tuned in for the, well, at least three-fourths of the first hour of 8 o'clock, because you want to hear Ron Wilson. We got one more segment here with him and get some final points from him. And we'll also learn about these beautiful plants of the week he brought in.
Kind of cool plants, no doubt about it.
Very cool.
Just a couple quick things. Remember, stop really severe pruning right now. Don't be doing that. Really heavy shearing or whatever. It's not good for the plants at this point. Roses, you shouldn't be deadheading at all. Let them start to let those old flowers turn into the old rose hips, those little orange seed pods that go on the very end. That tells the plant to shut down. Stop feeding roses. You shouldn't be doing that anymore. And I really start to back off on pretty much all feeding. I'll hold off till about mid to late October and come back and do some feeding at that time. But right now, we just want plants to start to think about shutting down, getting ready for the winter, which I'm having a hard time believing we're saying that. But
I know.
You know, it comes faster and faster every year. But, you know, start to slow down on that. Now, if you're deadheading things like perennials in that, to keep them looking good, that's okay. But now think about the perennials that may put up nice seed heads that the birds will enjoy through the fall and into the early winter.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of folks are now looking at leaving the perennial garden alone and cleaning it up in the spring versus doing it in the fall. Now, you know, it's good to do it in the fall so you get off to a clean start and you're ready to go in the spring and all of that. But looking at it a little bit differently, if you want to do it that way, and maybe you're too busy to do anything in the fall, of just kind of leaving it alone, because a lot of insects can overwinter. The good insects actually overwinter in some of that debris. They like the seed heads that are left on top of that. So, yeah. You know, it's one of those things you can kind of consider leaving some, maybe taking some down, depending if it's your front yard, you want to maybe look a little bit cleaner or whatever, that's fine. But you might want to think about that. But again, if there are things that you're deadheading that could form seed heads for things to the critters to eat, the birds especially, you know, leave that on there for you.
We always have our lawn, we have a service that does the mulching for us, because there's so much now that we can't do it. It's impossible.
Right.
We do it every fall. We just had it done. So a lot of people get their mulch delivered and put down in the springtime because it makes the yard look so good. It's worked out great for us to do it in the fall.
You do it, you know, and again, timing-wise, personally, I do it a little bit later in the fall, but it's okay. You're good. You're all right.
Yeah, I just did it.
Yeah. But you're right, because now it's considered somewhat of a, you know, going into the winter-type mulching, and you get in the springtime, kind of fluff it up because it's brand new. Looks great in the springtime.
Yeah. Hit the ground running.
Touch up here and there if you need to, and otherwise you're good to go till the following fall. So absolutely can be done, no doubt about it. If you have issues with winter annuals coming up in your beds, like chickweed and things like that, put a pre-emergent down with that as you put that down.
Good idea.
And that'll help to keep those from coming up. Also, I remind you, you can still plant. I mean, trees, shrubs, evergreens, especially trees, perennials. A lot of folks planting now butterfly weed, milkweed for those monarchs that are moving through and migrating back. And like I had mentioned last week, you know, people are picking them up that already have the larvae on them and in the greenhouse and taking them home.
Oh, wow.
Because they're still feeding and doing the little chrysalis thing and all of that as they continue to migrate. So bottom line is, as we look at this monarch situation, the butterfly situation, period, and the pollinators, milkweed's the answer. I mean, it's the answer. You plant it, they will come. They'll be there. So as you're fall planting or putting together your plans for next spring, continue to add butterfly weed and milkweed to your landscapes, to your containers, whatever it may be. Pollinators love them, but the butterflies use them totally.
I got to ask you a straight question on milkweed. We got some milkweed seeds. We went through the, you know, you get them wet and put them in the fridge, whatever, and then plant, and they didn't grow. Are they tough to grow?
Yes, actually, that's, you know, it can it'll reseed itself. In some areas, you'll see patches of it come up. It takes a long time to do that. Not all of those seeds come up, first of all. It's a lower germination rate. Sometimes it takes 2 years for them to come up, so you give up the first year and throw them away. But we've seen them actually take 2 years to germinate.
So if you had seeds, you can go ahead and just throw them in the ground right now and just let them go.
Yeah, just use them. You do them as a fall seed. If you want to do them inside, you can. But like the state of Ohio actually collects those. They ask you to turn those in, the seed pods, just as they're cracking open, and they'll take those and distribute those this fall yet in all the gardens around the state to try to create more of that seeding. And they're not going to get all of them to come up. A very low percentage of them come up. But, again, trying to recreate that habitat. That's what we're trying to do. And don't forget, as you're looking at the spring bulbs that you're planting in the fall season, there's a lot of bulbs that flower early on that are great for pollinators. And they'll tell you that on the package. So be sure you look at your planting for pollinators. Spring bulbs are thrown into that category as well, so take a look at that. Real quick, I know we're running out of time. Plant of the week this week, ornamental peppers.
You got some amazing ones
such
in
a,
there.
Such a great assortment of these to be used in planters in the fall just to give a little kind of fall color. But I think what you'll, and yes, these ornamental peppers are very edible. Some are very bland. Some are very hot. Some have stay short. Some get taller. Some have great colors of flowers. But what you'll notice about all these that are really cool is where are all the peppers?
Right on top.
They're sticking out of the plant, not growing inside the plant.
They grow like flowers.
That's why they're one of the reasons why they're an ornamental pepper. They show the pepper.
Yeah.
So they stick them out so you can see them. So it gives you great color.
That purple one is amazing.
It is. All of them are phenomenal. And remember that they are very sensitive to frost and freeze. So once we get to that point, just put them pot and all in your containers, your mixed planters. Then you can take it out, pot and all, bring it back in the house, grow it as a house plant in a really sunny location, and you may get a few more peppers on it throughout the winter season.
And so, then they'll come back out in the spring then?
Yeah, then you can put them back outside in the springtime if you can get them to come through the winter. But again, ornamental peppers for your decorative containers for the fall, bring them inside over the winter, but so many great varieties, cool names, colorful flowers, colorful peppers, you can't beat them.
They're beautiful. Ron Wilson, thank you. God bless you. Have a great weekend. We'll enjoy listening to you. Like I said, come down for my coffee in the morning on Saturday. I got your voice in the in the kitchen. Always listen to you, your program on the weekends in the
thank
Thomas
you, sir.
House. So do that tomorrow when you wake up. 55 KRC, the talk station. Hey, 41 right now here at 55 KRC Talk Station. Beautiful, beautiful morning. Set yourself up for a beautiful weekend. Put a smile on your face. It's Friday. And always happy at this hour on Fridays to be talking, or this time of the hour on Fridays, to be talking with Jason Williams from the Cincinnati Enquirer. You read what he writes in the Enquirer, which you find online at Cincinnati.com. And I always put a plug in for people. Hey, sign up, get a subscription, get local news. And we sure need it at this time of year coming up upon the election. Jason, welcome back. Happy Friday to you, man. I hope you're well.
Hey, Brian, happy Friday, and thanks for having me back on.
That's always a pleasure, and got a kick out of the – well, not a kick out of. I always enjoy reading the column. I love the headline, Jason Williams, defend the police versus defund the police. It's what Cincinnati's mayor's race is all about. And I was actually shocked. I don't know that AFTAB even knows we went through a collaborative agreement process after the 2001 riots. At least his comments don't seem to suggest that we already engaged in the type of reform that other police departments might need to go through. But we've been through it. We've got the reform. We've got a well-oiled machine on our hands, if understaffed.
Yeah, well, he references it in his public safety plan, and I say plan in quotations because it's really a lot of pretty left-wing talking points that you're seeing out there nationally in the national narrative around police so-called reform and that kind of thing. And he also, the impetus to sort of the discussion in the debate earlier this week between Mann and Pureval was around funding of the collaborative, and he wanted to fund the collaborative more, but didn't offer up. And Mann really pressed him on it and said, well, then, the panelists asked questions like, how are you going to fund this? And Pureval dodged the question, and Mann called him out on it and started to bring up and say, like, look, you want to send emergency, unarmed emergency responders to, out to certain calls. It's like, how are 911 operators supposed to decide whether to send an armed police officer or an unarmed social worker? And in the heat of the moment and when people are in distress and calling for help, and we're going to put that on our 911 operators to figure that out.
Yeah.
Where are you going to get the money to figure all that out and fund all these, emergency unarmed emergency responders as Pureval called them or refers to, his idea. And it's just like you go through, Brian, and you start to piece it together. And I've seen some of his campaign literature and some of the things he said on the campaign, some of the things he said on his website. And it's all code for – and I know it seems to be overused, but it's all code for the talking points for defund the police. And let's cut to the chase here and let's tell the truth. And, out of one side of his mouth, he says all those things. And out of the other, he says, oh, no, I don't support defunding the police. Well, what is it? And, you know, I think the consistency of what you see on the website and the campaign literature and certainly in that debate the other night, you know, it runs contradictory to that.
Yes, it does. And, you know, I go back to the fact that, you know, we know the type of problems here in the city of Cincinnati during the riots and during that whole nonsense that other cities went through last year. We have a really well-trained police department. The reforms that I think that Aftab Perval thinks that we need, we've engaged in, and the whole idea, and this is where I think, as you pointed out, David knocked it out of the park, which is, you know, come on, you're going to rely on a 911 operator taking the call for the first, it's a cold call. They just pick it up. They have no idea what they're going to be hearing on the other end of the line. And it's like, oh, no, that sounds like a social worker deal for me. He's going to send a social worker. You know, domestic violence. You engage in an argument with your wife so bad that it ends up with the police department being called. You need counseling. But right then and there, you need a police officer because those things go south really bad all the time, Jason.
Yeah, it's just, again, you're hearing that a lot from far left you know, candidates and politicians is that, you know, having social workers will go out. Well, guess what? The city of Cincinnati, and it's one of the best big city police departments in America, having come from a tough place, from the 2001 unrest and the unfortunate officer-involved shooting of Timothy Thomas. But you know what? The city of Cincinnati learned and people came together and they figured this out. And it's a police department that isn't perfect, but is a police department that I think we should be holding up and has been held up by recent chiefs as a model for how to do police community relations and good policing. And police are trained to go to, scenes that maybe don't involve needing, bringing a weapon to or being armed for. And so this stuff, it's just... Look, it's a political narrative that, you know, diverts from what's really, really at issue. And here in the city of Cincinnati is that, shootings and homicides were coming off a record year in 2020. We're on pace to be number two to that this year. And that's what really needs to be addressed. My brother's a police officer in the city of Columbus, and I can speak to this. Is that when you have the politicians behind you and supportive of you, it makes a huge difference. And when you don't, morale is down, and it only makes for an even worse situation. And our police officers, have been through a lot in the past year and a half. And, because something happened in another city hundreds of miles away, and has happened in other cities, unfortunately. Why should the police department here be held to account for something that happened in a completely different place, completely different circumstances, completely different trainings. I haven't delved into, I've read and that, the Minneapolis Police Department had a lot of problems and needed to be fixed. And I don't know if they're fixing it or not, but I don't care for the standpoint of what, how it relates to the city, the Cincinnati Police Department. And I know those men and women who are police officers who care right now. They're trying to address violent crime, and they don't need to have their morale, hurt anymore by a candidate who's potentially going to come in there and lay a bunch of officers off or make all this change to a police department that again has made all these changes and maybe there are things, there's certainly things that they need to go revisit in that collaborative and sort of revisit and go back and say, we kind of got away from this. We need to start doing this again. And so there are things like that probably need to happen. But overall, the fundamental drastic shakeup of the entire police department in the city of Cincinnati.
Not a popular thing, I think, among the general population either. Well, we can just wrap up the other topic I was going to break, but we're a little long in this segment, so we'll just go another couple minutes long. And talk about the Republicans endorsing issue three. The Charterites came out against it. The Democrats came out against it. This was the Tom Brinkman written, inspired, signature gathered deal to put it on the ballot to deal with. Obviously, we have a problem with ethics on council and criminal behavior allegations, et cetera. We know about the Gang of Five. We know about the indictments. This was his response to it. The Republicans endorse it. Everybody else doesn't like it. What's your take, Jason Williams?
Hey, somebody stepped up and, you know, took the bull by the horns and said, hey, we got to do something here about and have a sweeping reform on corruption. And I commend Tom Brinkman for doing that. You know, let the voters decide. And it's pretty ridiculous that there are a lot of Democrats working behind the scenes, a lot of people grousing to me, a lot of people like, you know, how can you say this is a good thing? And I didn't say it was a good thing or a bad thing. I said, it's a good thing, though, to let voters decide this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at it. And there are things like, yeah, I certainly could see where you may have some issues with, but across the board, it's sweeping reform. And let's be honest, Brian, it's the party that's caused all the problems that is against it. And it's pretty ridiculous when you think about it. And if it were the other way around and Republicans were doing this, I'd say the same thing. But look, you know, you're talking about you're putting a recall measure in for the mayor, which is a good thing. That requires thousands and thousands of signatures. So it's not like it requires just a couple hundred signatures. You know, I commend Tom Brinkman a lot, and I think a part of why the Democrats, you know, which I was actually surprised they came out publicly and against it and did not endorse it, or didn't, you know, said to vote no on it, because it's like, so you blatantly just came out and said you're against an anti-corruption measure.
I know. That's
a really bad look.
It is. And you know what the worst part about it is? I think most of it has to do with the fact that it cuts their salary by about 20 grand a year. It's a part-time job.
It is a part-time. Yeah. You know, there's nothing in place for a place that requires an elected official at City Hall even show up after they've been elected.
I know.
And you can do that job, you know, a couple meetings a week, and it legitimately is a part-time job. And honestly, I think if you did that and got it to a place where it was even the salary was even less, I think that would help folks get out and maybe, you know, go out and do a perspective from other residents.
The P.G. Sittenfelds and Chris Seelbox of the world actually have to go out and get a real job. Jason, I'll leave it at that because we're out of time. I appreciate you coming on the program on Fridays and talking about this. Cincinnati.com is where you can read what Jason and the others at the Enquirer write. And between now and next Friday, Jason, I wish you a very happy weekend and stay well, you and your family.
You too. Catch you next Friday, Brian. Thanks.
Take care, my friend. 852-55 KRC, the talk station. Got to mention foreign exchange.